As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Audible. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined by Bruce Feldman, as always, and Bruce, we got a lot of college football news to talk about today, but first we want to bring on a special guest.
Yes, it's our colleague Derek Crocker. He is one of the ones who's behind the glass for us and has a very interesting job, an interesting role, not just at Fox Sports, but also as a TV executive in the modern TV landscape.
Yeah, I don't know that a lot of people know how the process works of, you know, which games end up on which network and at what time. So we thought that might be interesting since all of you watch college football on TV, we assume. So let's get a little window into that. All right, well, we're pleased now to be joined by the Senior Director of College Sports for Fox Sports, and that's Derek Crocker. He has what I consider to be one of the coolest jobs in all of college football. He basically picks which games Fox shows through the course of the season. Derek, thanks for joining us, and I think people are going to find this interesting. When does the process start? So the 2016 season will kick off here soon. You know, ESPN has their games, Fox has their games, all the various networks. When does that whole process start?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It's basically a year-long process for us. You know, like, for instance, right now we're working on building the 2017 football season, so that's just you know, how far in advance that we're working on games. But, you know, it really kind of starts after the national championship game, somewhere in the January period of we start engaging with the other network partners for each conference and going through a draft process with them and deciding who has certain games on certain weeks of the season.
Derek, one of the things that I think is fascinating is it's, you know, we all and certainly fans think of games and we look at ahead at our schedule and go, okay, you know, this is going to be a big game and, you know, in the SEC or this is going to be a big game, we think, in the Big 12. But from your perspective and how you guys really handle the process, it's really more about the weekend than the game itself, correct?
Yeah, that's definitely correct. Because basically you're trying to set yourself up for having the best game on a certain weekend. So that's kind of where the strategy piece comes involved, is that you're picking weeks or weekends, you know, as part of the draft process.
Yeah, let's just explain that to people a little bit. So, because you've used the word draft a couple times now, is it really like, you know, a bunch of guys getting together to do a fantasy football draft, you and ESPN? And, well, let's just take as an example the Pac-12. ESPN has a relationship with them, Fox has a relationship with them, and then, of course, they have the Pac-12 network, and the games could end up on any of those three. So this draft you're referring to, maybe take us through it.
Yeah, I mean, it is similar to, I guess, if you think about playing fantasy football, you know, the main difference, as one of my colleagues told me, it's instead of a $50 buy-in, it's, you know, millions of dollars is our buy-in. So instead of picking your players, we're selecting matchups. It is a big kind of overall draft process. So it's, you know, picks one through you know, how many conference controlled games, you know, 60, 70 games potentially out there. You know, and there's a very specific draft process. I can't go into the details of that, but, you know, say that, you know, Fox will have the number one overall selection, say, in the Pac-12, and then ESPN will have, you know, the second selection, and then the Pac-12 network will have the number three selection, those kinds of things, and, you know, in the Pac-12 draft. So those are, that's just kind of a hypothetical example, but, you know, those are the kind of the larger principles of the draft. And then what we do is, you know, so whoever has the number one overall selection, they'll maybe select the number one pick in week 12 of the season. And that will be that will be taken with the number one pick.
So if, I mean, is it actually a, I don't know if you can get into this even, is it a conference call? Are you guys, how many people are, you know, in each boardroom just kind of gathered around? How does, like, you know, I keep thinking like these shots we have of like NFL draft, you know, of what that's like. Is that kind of far field, or is it something really kind of a little like that?
No, it's great. I mean, it's a combination of conference calls, in-person drafts. The guys from ESPN, they always love to come out in the springtime to LA. So they usually try to make an annual trip out to LA, and we sit down and talk about the year. But it's also not just one draft. It's probably like a series of drafts. It's never done in just one conference call or in one meeting. It's kind of a fun process, though.
And just like fantasy football, it seems like there's a little bit of gambling involved because, you know, like you said, you pick weeks, not games. So let's use last year as an example. I know you can't go into all the specifics, but we can reasonably guess that Notre Dame-Stanford, which was on our air Thanksgiving weekend, was a game you had an eye on before the season. USC-UCLA is that same weekend. I'm trying to think of a couple others. But so a reasonable person could look at that week before the season and go, oh, that there could be a couple great games. But at the end of the day, I mean, Notre Dame-Stanford turned out to be a great game with national championship implications, but you're betting on that, and it could just as easily, right, be, you know, by the time you get to it, 6-5 against 5-6.
No, I mean, you're exactly right. We're betting on certain weeks. I mean, it's definitely part of the strategy where you look at certain weeks and you go, well, there's, you know, several good games on a weekend, but, you know, specifically the Notre Dame Stanford last year, that was definitely one of our priority selections. And, you know, we were definitely looking at that weekend where, you know, there's a few really good games on the weekend. You know, likely the teams on that weekend were going to be playing for a college football playoff spot, those kinds of things. And luckily that's really kind of what happened. You kind of cut, you know, lightning in a bottle there to some extent with, you know, both teams being very highly ranked, major implications to the college football playoff picture. So those are the things that were, you know, that you hope, you kind of cross your fingers that everything comes together. But sometimes, like you mentioned, it just blows up on you too.
How much of the rules, like I remember there was a couple of years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, ESPN ended up with the Alabama-Auburn game just because of the number of times I think CBS had used it. It was almost like CBS got boxed in.
CBS picked too many Alabama. They had a limit on how many teams, how many games from one team, and they used up their Alabama picks before the Iron Bowl.
Yes. So what I'm getting at is how often are there kind of little, like, in the finer detail rules where people get caught up in it and, you know, just try to figure out, okay, we'd love to do this, but, oh, yeah, there's this other rule that's going to come back and bite us in the end that's pretty unique to the league. I mean, are there a lot of these deals like that are, you know, okay, this is the way it works in the SEC, but the rules for the Big 12 and the Pac-12 each are very unique that you guys always have to kind of, you know, keep in the back of your head that make these kinds of things really kind of more challenging than they probably seem on the surface?
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, in each conference does have a very specific set of draft rules. You know, there's certain limits on the number of certain teams that you can pick for each of the conferences. You know, that specific example that you gave, that happens in our Pac-12 and Big 12 drafts as well. It's just a matter of, you know, of the you making sure that you know all the various details. You know, it's a very it's a very detailed job, I guess you could say, like analyzing all the different variables. But also the most interesting thing is, you know, in part of the draft process is the collaboration between the networks as well. Even though we are competitors and it's our jobs to, you know, put the best schedule possible, we know that, you know, sometimes working together and, you know, helping each other through the various complexities, like you mentioned, of the draft makes all of our jobs easier because, you know, one mistake, you know, could potentially, you know, cause implications on your schedule, on the other person's schedule. And at the end of the day, it just could become one big mess as well.
And now, you know, one interesting thing is that obviously college football is not the only thing Fox and FS1 show in the fall. There's the baseball playoffs, there's MMA fights. And so I guess you got to kind of, I mean, how much of your job involves figuring out how to squeeze the number of games that are in the contract around the other things that the network's contractually obligated to show?
Yeah, I mean, that's like the huge jigsaw puzzle that's, you know, kind of fun to, you know, to try to figure out as well. We definitely have a team over here, you know, that works together. We talk on a daily basis of all the various, you know, contractual commitments that we have. So you're right, we do have to work around UFC commitments, you know, whether it's, and also Major League Baseball commitments, NASCAR commitments. And so that does make the number of windows limited to some extent. But at the end of the day, like, you know, there's usually those commitments, you know, ahead of time and can plan for.
Derek, this is off of the draft question, but it's a more of a programming question that I feel like I see a lot of fans have get a frustration on a Saturday when games bleed over and, you know, the game may not still be competitive, but it's like, hey, we're kind of locked into it. Why do TV executives schedule such tight windows when you know the games usually are a lot longer than 3 hours and 15 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, we typically try to schedule 3.5 hour windows to try to accommodate, and even on the broadcast network, sometimes we try to put 4 hour windows just to even give us even more of a buffer, because you never know, like, you know, games are going to overtime, games are going, you know, are just running long, you know, more teams that are passing the ball more, obviously those games are running longer. But we have very limited number of windows to be able to put games in. We have we have all these games to schedule, and you have, these are the windows that you have set. So, it is part of a gamble to, you know, put games back to back, but we try to do our best to make sure we have contingency programming ready, you know, an alternate network, an alternate feed somewhere to be able to start that game on time if the first game, say, is running long.
Well, and one of the things that I didn't realize how frequently it happens until I started working there and was there on a Saturday, early in the season, it seems like there's a weather delay at one of these games every weekend, maybe more than one sometimes. And, you know, like you said, like there's something else coming up afterward and it's bleeding over into that. I wonder if you could describe what a Saturday is like for you when that happens. And in particular, there's a great example from, I wasn't yet at Fox, but there was a year when a Big 12 game, I don't remember which one, ended up on Fox News.
Yeah. I mean, that's the nightmare scenario when you have weather delays, because, you know, you're kind of just going along with the weather. So we're constantly in that scenario. You know, we're constantly monitoring games. We're getting feedback from the weather services. We're getting feedback from the people on site, from both the schools and the conferences. We're basically all on one conference call talking about the various scenarios that are happening. When's the games coming back? Potentially on, you know, what will we do with our program? Will we keep it on that channel? Will we move it to a different channel? Those kinds of things. So, you know, each scenario is different, and you know, we have these contingency plans in place. So, you know, we have to call Fox News, or, you know, we have to call Fox Business, or you know, or we have Fox Sports 2 or Fox Sports Go or the regional sports networks. They're all potentially options for us if a game is running long or we have those crazy weather scenarios. And, you know, it happens every single year, probably, you know, once or twice a year. You hope it doesn't cause a catastrophe on your schedule. But at the end of the day, you can't really, you know, control Mother Nature.
Are those things that when they happen, I mean, because it happened, okay, this is like last year, or this happened, you know, X amount of times or whatever, where you know there's a go-to and you've already kind of sent emails out, hey, just in case this happens. I mean, it seems like, because the worst thing you'd want to have is a blank screen on your TV. So is it just because, you know, I know you guys are in the control room, and I know, you know, I always wonder, we're watching games, and somebody will emerge where it looks like they just, it's almost like they're in the delivery room or something, where they're either stressed out or whatever. And I remember a couple of years, I think it was 2 years ago, there was it was a weather game, and I think Wanstead had food poisoning. There was all kinds of stuff going on. I mean, it looked like an episode of Deadliest Catch kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the nightmare that you don't want to happen. So hopefully you do enough planning to be able to avert those disasters. But, you know, sometimes that happens. We're doing live television, and you're just dealing with some things you just can't control sometimes.
Okay, I would be remiss if I didn't ask a couple questions that we know fans care about, but, you know, I'm sure they're not your favorite thing to answer. One is, why, you know, Pac-12 fans in particular, why so many 10:30 Eastern kicks? How do, you know, how do we avoid that? And how often are you, you know, I think fans, obviously, that are going to the games want to know as far ahead of time as possible what time the game's going to kick off. Why, in some instances, does it go down to as narrow as 6 days before they know?
Yeah, so going back to your first question about night games, and it kind of back to a similar what we talked about earlier, is that kind of the collaboration between networks and the conferences. You know, so in this upcoming season, we were able to cut a deal with the conferences, and the conference and the Pac-12 cut a deal with the networks to be able to reduce the number of night games on the aggregate, which I think is, you know, is something that, you know, we've definitely been hearing from fans, something we've heard from the conferences, from the schools, from the coaches. You know, that's something that they're trying to do. So I think we made a good step forward in trying to reduce it on the aggregate. But in terms of those night games with the Pac-12, you know, it is the conference in terms of where they're at, you know, in terms of where they're at geographically and in certain time zones. You know, that 10:30 Eastern window is the only window where, you know, a game of, you know, of a Power Five conference, you know, on the West Coast is, you know, can be scheduled sometimes, because you have so many other commitments in that, in the noon or 3:30 or 7 Eastern window. So sometimes, you know, you have four games on the date, and, you know, the fourth game, you know, will be scheduled at 10:30 Eastern or 7:30 local Pacific time. So that's just kind of part of the scheduling process, and just geographically, sometimes where the Pac-12 sits, we just have we have to put X number of games on, and we only have X number of windows. So sometimes that's why that comes up. And then to your second question, in regards to why are 6 day picks or games are only selected that week of, it's all kind of part of, you know, the reason we have these 12 day selections or 6 day selections. You're trying to put the best games on possible. That's, you know, that's my job. That's the other, my colleagues at the other, networks, it's their jobs to put the best schedule possible. So you want to be able to follow the storylines. You know, if it's a game is being part of the, is shaping up to be, you know, an instrumental game in the college football playoff picture or to the conference race, or to even just, you know, potentially being part of a bowl selection. Those are all storylines that we want to follow. And so, you know, we know having basically the best games on makes for the best ratings, makes for the best TV. So those are kind of some of the factors that we use.
Hey, Derek, I got one other thing. It's kind of a more of a personal thing. I think for a lot of, you know, a lot of our listeners are not just fans of college football, but they're people, you know, younger people who probably would love to get into the industry. And I think the idea of having the influence and the power, you know, it probably is, you know, sounds pretty cool for a lot of people. I imagine you didn't grow up saying, hey, this is what I want to do, or you probably didn't even know that this job existed when you were going to school. What was your path to get to this position, to be in this role and to do this kind of job?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's, you know, it's definitely, I don't take this job for granted. It's definitely one of the, one of the better jobs, you know, to work in sports, and I feel definitely very blessed to be able to have this role. But my path to Fox was, you're right, there's no college degree that teaches you college sports programming or programming in general. You know, it's one of those, I got my start as, you know, different internships led me to, you know, to internship at Fox. I went to a small Division III school, it was just kind of one of those things that I started off as an assistant in the programming group at Fox, and kind of worked my way. I was always gravitating. I grew up watching college sports. Probably watch more college sports than any other sport out there. So I gravitated to the college side, and eventually, you know, just kind of working through some of the various things that, you know, that's come up in the last, you know, 10 or so more years that I've been working here at Fox. It's kind of landed in this role, which I love. There's always, as you guys know, the college industry is constantly changing. You know, our rights are always constantly changing. So there's always something out there to work on, something new and exciting. That's why I love it here, and specifically this job.
And that Division III school is the same alma mater as Steve Lavin, Chapman College, correct?
Right. Yep, Chapman University. Go Panthers.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah, who would have guessed that the person deciding, you know, which channel Oklahoma plays on would come from Chapman University. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it keeps me unbiased, I guess, right?
True. Well, we'll end with a little shameless plug here. The first game for FS1, correct me if I'm wrong, Kansas State-Stanford on Friday, September 2nd. On Saturday that week, Missouri-West Virginia. In the early window, Arizona-BYU, 10:30 Eastern. We were just talking about those, but deal with it, Arizona and BYU fans. The second week is Utah-BYU on Fox, Central Michigan-Oklahoma State, noon Eastern on FS1. If I miss one here, be sure to let me know.
You did. Baylor-SMU.
Who could forget that one? And Texas Tech-Arizona State, week 2 on FS1. And the big one, week 3, Ohio State at Oklahoma on Fox. Real quick, any big changes, things to people should watch for on the coverage this year?
We have some new talent coming in. I think, you know, that's always exciting. Our production group always does a great job, so I'm sure they're going to have some interesting bells and whistles like they always do. So I'm excited to kind of see. I saw you guys at Media Day. I saw some of our marketing shooting some of the footage of Media Day. I'm sure they have some big plans. So I can't wait for the football season. It's always my favorite time of the year.
Can you make sure that the games – I'm sorry. Can you make sure the games where Bruce does sideline, could you get him maybe a better baseball cap for when it rains? He took a lot of flack for that one last year. Can we make sure we upgrade that?
Yeah, no problem. I'll take that. I'll make sure.
You could get one of the Whitlock fedoras that are probably around the green room all over the place. All right. Thank you, Derek. We appreciate your insight and perspective. It is truly unique, especially because it's something, you know, not just fans. We are always, you know, kind of wondering how, you know, why we're watching what we're watching and how it ends up on different networks.
And now you know who to complain to when you don't like the kickoff time.
Exactly.
His phone number is... No, I'm just kidding.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on, Derek.
Hi, guys.
All right, we thank Derek for joining us. And you know, before we get to this one story that came up on Monday, and then we're taping Monday morning, Derek couldn't get into certain specifics. It's obviously some of its proprietary information, and we wanted to respect that. And this story kind of ties into it a little bit. On Monday, the Sports Business Journal, which is an industry trade, had reported ESPN and Fox Sports are angry over the Big 12's expansion plans. So I ask you, Stu, why are you so pissed off at Bob Bowlsby?
We want to make it clear that there's a pretty clear distinction at Fox between the people who would make a decision like that and us. It's way above our pay grade. So it's not like, you know, before we started recording, we asked Derek why you hate the Big 12 so much. That never even came up. But yeah, I don't think it's not surprising. It's long been the reason why, the main reason why we didn't think they could expand, because there just aren't enough schools out there that are attractive enough to, you know, belong to a power conference. Now, I know that the Big 12 did a lot of preparation for this. They have TV consultants. I can't imagine they were caught off guard to hear that ESPN and Fox weren't thrilled about having to pony up the, you know, remember, they are on the hook. Whether, you know, if they do it, they're on the hook. They can't say, sorry, we're not paying you. It was put in the contract. You know, they'll still get the same amount per school that they get now. So you could see why maybe those networks would be a little bit, you know, maybe wanting to throw their weight around a little bit before they have to cough up that 20 to 25 million per year per school.
Yeah. And I think that this comes back to how big are the brands we're talking about? I mean, that's just the issue. But ultimately, we'll see what happens. I mean, just because TV execs aren't thrilled about something doesn't mean they don't have to go along with it.
No, and we have a perfect example of that from last week. If we're up to ESPN, you know, that New Year's Eve semifinal this past year never would have happened. It took it took a year into it for the playoff people to come around to that. So, you know, I think a lot of people like to believe that ESPN or Fox, you know, runs college football, calls the shots for these guys. Obviously, their money comes with a lot of influence, but I don't know that they are in a position to dictate these things. So it'll be interesting to see. I got to be honest, it's been frustrating trying to get updates on where they are in the realignment expansion process, because nobody knows what's going on. Nobody that you or I know within the Big 12 has any idea what's going on. This is really just Bob Bowlesby and the 10 presidents.
I told you this when we had Thamel on a couple of weeks ago, right after the conference call with the Big 12. I told you this is the hardest story for the media to report on, because normally we rely on coaches and ADs, and this is above their heads. And you know what? Like, we guys like us, and I don't know, the only person I know of who I think is kind of plugged in, who's a front-facing media person, is not a sports writer. And I won't say who that is, but I just don't think there's a lot of us who – it's a different kind of story.
Well, word will eventually – if they are going to add schools, word will eventually trickle out, and it'll probably come from not the conference but the schools themselves that are possibly being added. But, you know, I think it says something that a lot of the big – you know, this is a very unusual thing the Big 12 did, to publicly declare their intentions. In fact, I heard Mike Oresko, the AAC commissioner on SiriusXM recently, kind of lamenting that, right? Because now, basically, like, they had the clam bake this week, you know, the big media event, and all their coaches are going to get asked about, do you think you're going to get invited to the Big 12? You know, I think he's realistic enough to know that if one of them gets an invite, they're going. And I don't think he would begrudge them. But he does wish this wasn't such a public process. And at the same time, for all we know, right now, behind closed doors, they've decided not to do it. Or they've decided to add eight schools. We just really, beyond that, those comments from David Boren that first day, there have been no real firm updates. I just realized now that I said that, during the time between us recording this and Teddy putting it out, they're going to announce something.
Further proof that we don't know what we're talking about.
All right, another story we want to get to. When I first saw this,
is it a story or is it a non-story? I know what you're going to get to, but is it a story? Is it a real story?
Texas A&M.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking the recruiting retweet stuff.
We'll get to the recruiting retweets okay. In a second. Was it Friday? I believe.
Yes.
Texas A&M suspended two assistant coaches, and the reason for that is that they did a women's clinic, and a lot of these programs do women's clinics, and the coaches that ran it put up these slides that when I first saw them, I thought somebody photoshopped those, or this is an Onion parody. It was so outrageously sexist. You just didn't think this was possibly real, that it happened, or that they could go into a room and draw these up and think this is going to be hilarious. This will kill.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the same perspective you had on it. Because I saw it had come from the first kind of reporting on I saw was retweeted on my timeline. It was from a Texas A&M, or I'm sorry, a University of Texas kind of a recruiting site. And it was like, okay, that's bizarre. I can't believe that that actually happened. And then, you know, sure enough, Kevin Sumlin issues a statement saying there's absolutely no place in our program and our university, you know, for inappropriate conduct or degrading comments towards women and further. And I thought of it, I was like, do some of these guys think it's still 1991? Just the idea that if this was this was a joke that was made, you know, within the context of a staff room kind of thing, that wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, I think, you know, guys, a lot of when there's a locker room mentality that exists and it's not limited to 18 and 19 and 20 year olds. And I think it can often, you know, go on to, you know, guys 40 years older than that. But the idea that, you know, this is going to be done in a public forum, which this essentially is, and you don't think A, you think it's funny, but B, you think that wouldn't get out, that somebody in that room wouldn't be, you know, feel like it's inappropriate or awkward and wouldn't take a picture of it. Now, probably beyond that, the bigger part of the story is one of the two coaches who was suspended without pay is Jim Turner. He's a new Texas A&M offensive line coach. Now, he was at Texas A&M under Mike Sherman before that. But he was also – the reason why his name may be more familiar to NFL fans is because he lost his job as part of the bully scandal around Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin with the Dolphins a couple of years ago. So the fact that he was, you know, behind this is, you know, shows some really bad judgment.
Football coaches, we've used this analogy many times. They live in a bubble sometimes. I mean, I don't want to generalize because some coaches are very worldly, but many wake up early, go into the office, you know, close the blinds, watch film, go for a lift, go watch more film, and rinse and repeat. And there's just not a lot of connection with the outside world and maybe how society is changing. I just can't believe that would happen in 2016.
Yeah, and I find it hard to believe that, you know, after this example, some other coach will do something. You know, I'm not saying some other coach won't do something really knuckleheaded, you know, decision, but I suspect there'll be another story kind of like this, you know, within, you know, months from now. And
well,
it's
what do you think? So these women's clinics go on around the country, and they are obviously meant to, they're very well intentioned, right? They are meant to basically give women, you know, give these fans a window into what college football is like. But it also,
it's pretty insulting, though, to think,
yeah,
that
it seems like a bit of a relic.
Like my wife is a big Dallas Cowboy fan. She grew up, you know, as a huge Dallas Cowboy fan. Now, does she know the difference between inside zone and outside zone? No, I don't think she does. But I think there's a lot of guy fans who go to games and watch games who don't either. And quite honestly, there's a lot of stuff that we in the media, you know, sitting in the press box, don't know the inner workings of. I mean, you know, if they wanted to have some kind of chalk talk, you know, where it's like you could say it's football 101, then you could have football 201. It doesn't have to be the graduate level stuff that like GAs know or anything like that. But I don't think it should be, you know, delineated by, okay, this is for women and this is for men, because there's a lot of men who are big football fans who don't know that much about the game. And maybe they don't care about specifics. They just want to, you know, watch their team play, and that's great and all. But some of these women's football clinics, you know, they have a component of like, hey, let's show how a player gets dressed. I think I remember this when I was around Ole Miss, and this is, you know, 10 years ago, where I think Ben Jarvis Green Ellis was like, you know, it showed him putting on his pads. It's not like a strip show, but you're watching this guy who has like, you know, this muscled up guy with a six pack, you know, there's an element of like, you know, kind of women elbowing each other as they watch this kind
of
thing.
That's gross. I guess, well, first of all, we should also mention, I mean, I believe this was a fundraiser. A lot of these events are fundraisers. But like you said, couldn't it be not specific to gender? Couldn't you just do a football 101 chalk talk that anybody can come to if they pay whatever the, you know, admission was?
No question. I mean, but, and you know what? I don't know. Like, are we getting too outraged in this? I saw a story that was, I think it was in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I think you told me you saw it too, where Shelley Meyer, Urban Meyer's wife, was quoted in it and talked about, you know, maybe it's overly PC reaction to some of this stuff.
I don't doubt there were women in that room that found it hilarious, but I would imagine the majority did not. And, you know, there was obviously the Texas A&M fan reaction on Twitter was immediate. You guys are making too much of this. It's a PC thing. Da, da, da. I guarantee you if the same exact thing happened at a Texas football clinic, they would not have been saying that. So it was inappropriate. And let me ask you this. By the way, when I first heard that Jim Turner was in it, I didn't realize the Richie Incognito connection. I just thought of our SEC Media Days podcast a few weeks ago where you were just raving about his impact as an offensive line coach and how much he's going to help this program. There have been some people pointing out, right, that there have now been three A&M assistants disciplined in this offseason for various things. We've heard the rumblings over the years that, you know, I believe when we know about Johnny Manziel was allowed to pretty much run rampant there, and we know that I'm getting my A&M transfer quarterback.
Kyle Allen's
at
Dennis
Houston,
Dodd.
Right? Yeah. Told Dennis Dodd one of the reasons he left was that the culture was just too loosey-goosey. This just reinforces that image that Kevin Sumlin has, you know, that old cliche about Mark Richt, right? He just lost control of the program. That it's just kind of running roughshod.
Yeah. Look, I mean, the Jim Turner stuff, you know, by and large, I mean, it's the off the field things, and you could come into question saying, should he be coaching college, you know, college athletes? If this is his judgment that he's displaying, you know, are we overreacting? I mean, I think ultimately it's going to be determined whether, you know, if Kevin Sumlin's team wins enough, and whether that's, you know, nine games plus and beating somebody good, whether it's, you know, Ole Miss or Alabama or LSU, will that be good enough? I think then these are moot points, and then it ultimately comes back to that. But I think given the attention, I mean, the stuff with Aaron Moorhead, that's the receivers coach. That was the third assistant you're referring to. I mean, that was over his basically subtweeting of a, you know, recruit who decommitted, and that blew up, and that was an ugly look. I mean, again, it's all judgment here is what we're talking about. And I think when you trust guys to be professional and they don't, you know, it's a bad look ultimately. I mean, let me read you this quote, and this is from Shelley Meyer, and it was a Pittsburgh Post-Gazette story. Again, Urban Meyer's wife, who's participated in her husband's women's clinic on a wives panel, said she has heard the criticism surrounding the clinics and said the objective of Ohio State's clinic, first and foremost, is to raise money for cancer research. And again, a lot of these clinics they are for good causes, and I think that should be pointed out. But here's her quote. I have a lot of not politically correct things I would say about that because I'm so tired of all this equality and junk and all that. Why can't we have a women's clinic? Why can't we just have a women's clinic that's a fun day for women? Because as a rule, I would say a majority of women don't understand the game like men do. Men get to play it. It's just a service provided, end quote.
Shelley's never been afraid to speak her mind about certain things. I'll put it that way.
All right. That's your only reaction?
Well, you know, on the one hand, my reaction would be exactly what you said before. I think that's an unfair characterization. I think there's lots of women who know just as much, if not more, about football than men. We work with some of those women, it should be noted. You know, there are lots of women covering college football in the media who certainly know as much, if not more, than we do.
And I don't think Shelley Meyer is disputing what you said or what I just said either, though.
Well, and I think that Shelley Meyer spends a lot more time around that culture than we do. You know, I'm sure she, obviously she knows the coaching culture, but I also think that part of being the head coach's wife at a major university like that, right, is a lot of schmoozing. She probably knows a lot of, for instance, the female either donors or wives of donors, and, you know, that's her observation. And I, you know, I'm sure that she's not making that up out of thin air.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, I think these are all fair, points and perspectives, you know?
Can I just correct myself on something? I'm a little sleep deprived this morning, actually a lot sleep deprived. And I said earlier that, Kevin Sumlin's program was running roughshod, which, you know, that would mean he's dominating. I meant running amok.
Got it.
Yeah. Many grammar people listening. Rob Stone would be very disappointed. I know that.
Yes, Rob Stone with his English degree from Colgate. So, all right. I think we've kind of gone pretty far on the women's.
Well, the other thing you wanted to talk about was.
Yeah, whether it's a story or not, I came home from a wedding on late Sunday night and saw my Twitter feed, and I was like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, and I was at a concert, and I came home, and I was like, and my Twitter feed was just like 57 Gary Patterson retweets in a row. I was like, has Gary Patterson lost his mind? And then, you know, I finally got to the, and I probably should have known this was coming, but August 1st, the new NCAA rule went into effect allowing coaches to RT and favorite recruits' tweets. Not allowed to comment, not allowed to add a comment, but you can acknowledge them. And what a stupid rule. And we're seeing that. I mean, it's midnight or 12:01 a.m. Suddenly, all these coaches that you and I follow just started hitting the retweet button like crazy. And what is that accomplishing?
Well, as one coach who called me, a head coach called me Monday morning and said, you know, I mean, please tell me kids really aren't going to commit because of this, to pick a school because of this. And I think there's an element that will, or because it's all about, you know, who loves me and who's respecting me and this. And it's, I think there's an element of human nature, and I'm going to take the 18 and 17 and 16 year old parts out of this, and I'm going to say it to you. Be honest. If one of your friends and colleagues in the media retweets your column, as opposed to maybe somebody else who wrote this a similar themed column, don't you feel a little bit of a positive vibe for that person? Of course you do, Stu. Of course you do.
I mean, do I feel a positive vibe? Yes, but this I don't know that analogy works. It's not like I'm choosing which of these friends I'm going to spend the next 4 years with based on that.
Okay, let me give you a different side of it. Let's say that you posted some personal pictures of your kid, and somebody clicked liked on it on Facebook, and one of your friends who usually likes other people's, you know, kids doesn't click like on yours. Do you take notice of that?
I really don't, but I know a lot of people do. I know that the Instagram culture is basically, for a lot of like younger people,
it's validation.
Yeah, like you send something out there and then you immediately check to see who did or didn't like it. But
and say it's for a lot of young people, Stu, because I'm older than you, and I am petty enough, and probably, but I'm honest about it. I do notice some of this stuff. You know, okay. Maybe this is the Libra in me or whatever, but you know, there's. Again, I don't know if I would. I'm saying I would choose a school from this. And if it came down to it, and Les Miles retweeted something of mine, and Brett Bielema didn't, would I be like, Brett Bielema can't set foot in my house? You know, if he was coming to visit me because of that, I hope it wouldn't come to that. Because you're talking about opportunity and decisions. But again, I think there is a part of this that is just human nature, and it's like there's a little bit of like. There's a little warm and fuzzy feeling when people give you the thumbs up like that.
Yeah, so I don't dispute that. I'll acknowledge that. But these kids send many, you know, send a gazillion tweets a day. You know, are they really going to keep track of which ones?
Yes,
Les Miles
I think they
did
are.
Or did not retweet.
I think they're going to. I think we're talking about coaches and programs. We're not talking about like whether the you know necessarily a fan or somebody. You know, one of the 247 or Rivals or Scout guys.
So does that mean that Les Miles or Les Miles, more likely Les Miles social media guy, has to now sit there all day and like and retweet every single thing that any of the kids that are recruiting?
Yes, it does.
Well, then thank God for the mute button.
It does. And I look, I know this, that, you know, coaches make a point of letting a kid know that they were the first person they call at 12:01 or the first person they visit on, a, you know, an open period. Because it means something to certain kids. It's why, look, it was why Ogeron wanted to be the first person to offer a kid, because it was like, because I wanted to be the first person to step out there and, you know, tell a kid I believed in him.
Ultimately, somebody pointed out, I think John Solomon from CBS pointed out, and I think it's a good point, that the NCAA now has a policy on liking and retweeting, but they don't have a way to enforce their own concussion policy. So I think this is a bit of misplaced priorities. I mean, at the end of the day, it's harmless, right? You know, like, retweet away. I'm of the opinion they should deregulate all of it and don't worry about whether you're texting at the right time or any of that stuff. It's just so stupid and petty. But that's not how it is. So they have to go through one by one and on a case-by-case basis and say, all right, let's address the retweeting crisis. And next week or next year, maybe we'll address the Instagram-like crisis. It's silly. It's been going on for probably, I mean, I can remember them debating whether or not to allow text messages almost 10 years ago when people started, you know, texting commonly. At that time, the funny thing is at that time, the main reason they were concerned was that it wasn't unusual at that time for a 17-year-old to have a phone plan that you got charged every time you got a text message. So these kids were running up these huge bills. I may be naive. I will admit I'm not a frequent shopper of self-service, but I don't think most people pay per text anymore.
Yeah. And look, I think the John Solomon tweet is a fair point about the concussion protocol and about certain things like that, which, you know, are more significant. But this is the NCAA culture that's kind of gets bogged down in the minutiae so much.
Right.
So, as I said, I don't know if this is a story. I feel like it's a non-story. And I feel like really the only people who would really be griping about it will be college football or media, because we're the ones who follow multiple head coaches. Like, I'm not sure if I'm an Alabama fan, why I need to follow Mark D'Antonio or Gary Patterson. You know, I'll follow Nick Saban. I might follow Gus.
Well, they probably follow their own team's coach, and many of them now follow all of the recruits too. So maybe they would be looking to make that connection. I feel bad for, because I should back up. The reason this is being allowed is that they've decided that it follows the spirit of the larger rule, which is, in general, coaches are not allowed to comment on recruits, but they can confirm that the kid is being recruited, which is interesting because you don't hear that very often, right? You don't hear a coach come into a press conference and get asked about, hey, are you recruiting Tate Martell? Yes, we are. They tend to not even want to go in that direction. But theoretically, you can confirm that you're recruiting somebody. And so retweeting one of his tweets is confirmation that you're recruiting him. So now, if you're a beat writer for Alabama, probably a bad example because I don't think Nick Saban's going to be tweeting anytime soon. If you're a beat writer for TCU, do you have to monitor this 24/7 and see which recruits they are or not retweeting?
I mean, realistically, if you're a beat writer for, you know, any school and you're any good at it, you know somebody in the recruiting office and you know who they're recruiting and who they aren't recruiting.
Right.
So, that's, I mean, true. And also they can publicize recruits, you know, if it's a kid who is signed, you know, to a national letter of intent, and then, you know, then you're locked into that kid, but then they're not necessarily locked into you. So some of these rules have kind of shifted in just in the last couple of years.
Right. Hey, good news. Camp opens around the country for teams this weekend, and we'll be able to turn our attention to that instead of talking about retweets.
That is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So as always, if you enjoy the Audible, you should subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app, and you should tell your friends to as well. Also, we like to get your emails on our second podcast of the week. Please send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we will see you next time.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.